The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1108. It's the 3rd of July, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Haydn Locke, Executive Director of Emerson. That's EML. And Haydn talks about the recent appointment of mining industry veteran as chairman and also outlines the project's potential and milestones coming up. Plus, I have Malki, Oil and Gas Sector Authority, talking about Sound Energy, Eco Energy, Victoria Oil and Gas, Faro Petroleum, Diversified Gas and Oil, and Rockrose Energy. Plus, Alan Green talking about Hollywood Bowl. Ticker there is Bowl. At also Salt Lake Potash, SO4, ECR Minerals, and Cadence. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Haydn Locke, Executive Director of Emerson. EML is the ticker. Haydn, thanks for joining me again.
Thanks, Justin.
Now, you've had a couple of bits of news out, and we'll cover that in a bit. Before we do, for people who are new to the podcast or have not heard of the company and you are newly listed, can you explain what is Emerson all about, please, Haydn?
Yes, absolutely. Emerson is developing the exciting Chemisette Potash project, which is located in northern Morocco. It's got a large inferred resource already in place, so it is a development stage asset. And we recently completed a £6 million fundraise and are well positioned to really accelerate and deliver on the development milestones.
Yeah. Now, when you say it's got a large resource there, explain the size of it, if you could.
So the current resource, which is not closed off in the deposit, is over 300 million tonnes. And to give that some context, based on what we're thinking about for a mine, we think it'll be at least 20 years of mine life. So it's a very long-lived project already.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And of course, a month back we did touch on it. So your next sort of big milestone, is that really the scoping study?
Yeah, the scoping study will be out in Q1 of 2019 is what we're guiding. There may be some potential to accelerate that. And that's really the big first milestone, which confirms the technical and economic viability and will allow us to wrap some numbers around it and tell people just how good this project potentially is.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there's guys like yourself and other guys sort of can sort of work out or estimate what it's going to be. But to me, until you've actually, you know, got that there in black and white writing, that you know, people don't sort of take it seriously, do they? I mean, you have to go through those stages to create value in the company, and that will show exactly what the NPV is, and not exactly, but immediately estimation and the economic viability, won't it?
Exactly right. Exactly right. And what we do for that process is we go out and we find world-class consultants to provide us with their expertise on the various bits that make up the project, from geology to mining to processing. And we combine all of those in through one of our consultants to deliver a final product, which is what the project could look like.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's in Q1 next year. And you've announced the appointment of a mining industry veteran as chairman there. So take us through this, if you could, Haydn.
That's right. We announced Mark Connolly as the chairman of the board. Mark is very well known in the mining industry, having been CEO and managing director of a number of companies. He has a very strong African focus and has been involved in the building and delivery of a number of large-scale mines in Africa. So a really good person to have on board as we're about to kick off our development pathway for this project. He's been through it before, he has a lot of contacts, and he knows exactly where the pitfalls are in a development schedule. So a fantastic appointment, and very excited to have him on board.
Yeah, absolutely. And have you worked with Mark before, have you?
I have. I was Mark's number two at a company called Papillon Resources, which he and I took from an early stage discovery right through all of the scoping studies and into construction, and then sold to a Canadian company called B2 Gold for nearly $600 million.
Yeah, so you've got a sort of you and him together, a bit of a track record here. So that's something. And so, and Papillon, like you say, you sold for nearly $600 million. What was the start valuation when you joined that? Do you remember?
It was sub 50. Yeah, so it was relatively low. It's a pretty successful little venture that we had.
And we
see a lot of potential in this one as well. So yeah. Fingers crossed we can follow a similar pathway.
Absolutely. Okay. And just for quickly, for people not aware of, you know, of the sort of potash and sort of market and the demand and supply, what's it all about there, Hayden?
So it's a great question, actually. The potash market, and I think this is largely below the radar, but the potash market has improved very, very strongly in the last 6 to 12 months. And it's not being really spoken about the same way that the metals and mining sort of mini bull run has been spoken about. But we're seeing significant improvement in the potash price, especially in Brazil. It's up 20% in the last 12 months and 10% in the last 3 months, so actually accelerating. There's a lot of rumours around that the Chinese contract negotiation, which typically sets the market price for the year, there's a lot of upward pressure on that negotiation. Some are calling a 26% increase over last year's price. And once again, expecting a record year of demand this year and now starting to forecast a record year of demand next year. So really, really strong fundamentals for the potash market, which is only positive for a project like the Chemisep project that Emerson owns.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Well, Hayden, if someone's listening and likes the sound of this but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
We have an exciting project which we believe has the potential to be a low capital cost, high margin potash mine, which is very, very rare. We've already commenced the scoping study and news flow is going to be very strong as we seek to confirm the technical and economic viability of the project. And the valuation is still very compelling given what we have and the fact that the potash market is turning into what we believe is into a mini bull market.
Excellent stuff. Hayden, good to chat to you and hopefully you're chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Malky, a specialist in oil and gas. You're right, Malky.
I'm extremely well, thanks, Justin. And you?
Yeah, good. And as so often sometimes, some interesting chat happens before I hit the record button. So let's stop there. This is good stuff. Let's get it on the podcast. So, I saw a video of Donald Trump just doing an interview. I don't know who it was with, but in his simplified way, he's just saying, they need to put 2 million barrels out there. You know, talking about the Saudis and explain, because I mean, the oil price is up. You know, it's quite strong. It's towards $80 almost, isn't it? But I mean,
yeah.
Explain the sort of dynamics of this and what he wants to do and hurt Iran and his relationship with the Saudi. Explain this if you could, Malky.
Yeah, well, it's laden with complications, but simply put, it's this part of it is based on Donald Trump and to a certain extent U.S. Hatred of Iran, which is why the sanctions have been reimposed. Come November, there'll be very little opportunity for Iran to sell crude oil. Now, what happens then, as you've noticed, we've talked about it, is that when people think that you might get 1 to 2 million barrels a day off the process, the oil price will go up. And, of course, despite the fact that he's got 10 million barrels a day plus coming out of the US, and therefore a high price is good, he doesn't want it to sink the US economy. Mm-hmm. So what he's done here is that he's made it look like he's on very good terms with the Saudis, and I'm sure he's on better terms than previous presidents, to be fair, and that he's rung up King Salman and said, my old friend, can you put 2 million barrels a day on? And he's what he's done is he's used the fact that the Saudis hate the Iranians with almost as much venom as the Americans do. So you can see where he's coming from, and you can see why the Saudis would have some sort of sympathy. But there are two slight problems to the whole thing. First of all is that Saudis don't like being told what to do by anybody. So, you know, the idea of Donald Trump ringing up and speaking to King Salman, I'm sure they would say, I hear what you're saying, but we are already going to produce more as a result of the announcement we made with the Russians the other day. Mm-hmm. And the other problem is that the Saudis just can't put on 2 million barrels a day just like that, particularly in the summer, because in the summer months, domestic consumption at home in Saudi Arabia goes through the roof, because since the Arab Spring, there've been, you know, one of the things that they did was to allow things like air conditioning in factories and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So if you said to me that it was December, they probably could. I mean, they've never produced 12 million barrels a day. They produce exactly 10 at the moment. And I think that with a little bit of sales from stock and generally increasing over the next few weeks, they could probably get to 11. But I don't think they can get to 12 in a hurry. But this is all the different angles that are coming in on the oil price. And the bottom line is that after that announcement, there was a huge sort of, on Friday evening and Saturday, people thought, oh my God, 2 million barrels a day extra in the Saudis, the oil price is going to go through the floor on Monday morning. Mm-hmm. Well, the answer is it hasn't. It's come down by about 50 cents because the underlying is that nothing much is going to change. So, yeah. You know, it's nearly $80, as you said, which is pretty good for most oil companies because costs are still being kept very tight.
Yeah, and I think Trump there, like always, is sort of overstating his influence because, you know, what the Saudis do there will be their number one priority is for the kingdom, isn't it? It's not for America or anyone else or, you know, so what they do will be aligned to what they want to do, full stop.
Yeah, I mean, they do have a thinking in the same way with regard to Iran, but that's where it stops.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Let's look at some specific oil and gas stocks. What are you looking at, Mike?
Okay, yeah, I'm looking at a few things, actually. I noticed that Sound Energy have announced this morning a $15 million placing at 37p. So that's a 7.5% discount. So quite a lot tighter than some of the issuance in the last few weeks, where we've seen some quite significant discounts, ironically. This is quite smart, really. I mean, in the press release, it says it's to strengthen the company's cash position ahead of the initiation of they've got three, what they call high-impact wells in Morocco coming up. And the reason why it's quite smart is, of course, because they don't need the money as such. They can drill these wells from existing cash and so on. But this is what you might call contingency money, you know, that leaves them in a very strong position for negotiation or renegotiation after the wells have been drilled. They don't want people to think that they didn't have the money. So even the fact that they raised money at a fairly tight discount ahead of this is quite smart. We haven't spoken about Sound for ages and ages, and then about two or three weeks ago they came up with something like five RNSs on the bounce. Mm-hmm. This is because all the hard work is being done behind the scenes in terms of the Morocco work, and we're now beginning to see the fruits of that. So it'll be a busy summer for Sound Energy.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, that's good. And shareholders will be pleased with that.
And the sister company, one of the three, Echo Energy, we talked about this because they've had what looks like might be a very substantial discovery of hydrocarbons in Argentina. There's not much to add at the moment in the sense that they've got the province over there who they have to treat with kid gloves because they make the announcements on discoveries are going through all the details. But having said that the CEO had an analyst presentation last week, which I was at, there's absolutely no doubt that these early wells that they've been drilling, workovers and then testing and so on, are proving to be way better than I think market expectations. Echo is cashed up, and I believe that there's a good result here. We have to wait and see. But they, they've got one or two new people in the senior management area at Echo, which means that they are moving fast. They're putting, as I say, Jeff Probert, who is exceptionally good, and he was sitting with me at the presentation, and they've got a new CFO. So, you know, Echo are very much on the move, in my view.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Next up, sorry?
Go on, saying, we said last week on that chart, it had a nice little rise, but it needs to break out of that resistance level, which is about 16, 16 and a half pence. If it breaks out there, it could be off to the races for them, but it's resistance at the moment, you know?
My guess is that it would be, and I would expect it will go up at some stage quite soon, I suspect.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Victoria Oil and Gas has had a tricky old year. Just after the new year, you know, they lost their, I think on a temporary basis still, but they lost their power generating orders in Cameroon, where they operate. And they've been adding clients across the board since then to make up for it. And yeah, these clients are much better margin clients than the state energy power generation companies. So that's good. But on Friday, they announced that they'd done a deal with Natural Gas. This is a Turkish company which is the biggest distributor and supplier of CNG, that's compressed natural gas, you and me, and that is for, you know, gas bottles and bigger, bulkier delivery of gas in order to make power generation. But it also does, you know, everything from home heating to vehicle supplies as well. So initially in Cameroon, they're going to build the facilities, but if it works there, they're going to roll it out. As I say, natural gas is the biggest European company in this field, and I think that following the ENEO difficulty, this is extremely good news for Victoria Oil and Gas. It's going to take a while to work itself through. It's not going to happen in 5 minutes. But if, for example, if your listeners have had VAG and wanted to know whether it's worth sticking with or not, I think it probably is.
Yeah, I mean, didn't share price reacted a little bit, but at the moment the chart is still in a sort of downtrend, and it needs to break that, I suppose. But yeah, like you said, it may take a while. But
yeah, it'll take a while. But you know, if you've got it, I think patience will be a virtue on this one.
Mm-hmm.
One or two other bits of news last week. I just thought I'd point out we had some and further good news from Faro Petroleum on their Fogelberg appraisal and drill stem test. As you know, Faro is one of my favourites in the sector. Very, very good management. Some of the best exploration, well, probably one of the best exploration records in the sector. So Fogelberg had a very good gas flow and some liquids, and therefore adding 40 to 90 million barrels of oil equivalent to the portfolio. They've got a lot going on in the next few months. They've got five wells coming up, all fully funded. This is partly because they're quite smart in terms of their portfolio rationalization. So when they've got something which is turns out to be really big, they can just farm out a little bit of it in order to fund the rest of their portfolio. As I say, I'm a big fan of Faro. Mm-hmm. You know that DNO announced that they had a big stake in it earlier in the year. The company are not worried about it. I met with the CEO a couple of weeks ago, and he's just going to continue delivering the goods, which is what Faro do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, FPM is ticker there. Anything
FPM.
Else?
Now, yeah, two quickies. Diversified gas and oil is something that you and I have talked about before.
Yeah.
This is a company, US-based, US-managed, and they have thousands, literally almost tens of thousands of stripper rigs in the States, sometimes producing a handful of barrels a day. But they keep making acquisitions and they keep raising money with people want to pay. Now, you want to have a look at this shale, this price, yes, last week, because they announced another huge acquisition for $575 million worth of stuff, which is interesting because obviously they've got, they're just adding it to their portfolio, so to speak. And they raised $250 million at 97p. Now, I don't know what your chart says for the price at the moment or last week, but that was already, we're talking about a small discount for sound, but this was a premium to the market price.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money, and yet the shareholders continue to to love this stock. I haven't met with the management, and I'm very impressed. They're going to pay a dividend, so that's why one or two of the, I think the bigger institutions are feeling that this is a good way of doing it. The risk is low, they're going to get a dividend out of it, and they get exposure to the energy sector. But last time I saw it, the price was racing up, went through...
Well, on 96.5 pence, where's it close? It closed, 96 pence, what was that, on the 14th there, and it opened back up at 117.
Yeah.
So a nice 20 pence gap up, a nice gain there. So, there's a big gap, almost through the pound level up to 117 from 96. So that's quite nice.
Yeah, so, a lot of people have missed this one a bit, but I would say it's worth keeping an eye on. There'll be more of these acquisitions and deals, I think. It's sweeping up a load of stuff from sellers of acreage in the States.
Yeah, it's in their DNA, but the looks of it, they are definitely acquiring left, right and centre. Marvellous. Anything else, Mackie?
Just one more. I've talked about Rock Rose Energy in the past. They announced last week that the most recent acquisition from DS, which is Dutch, is moving towards completion. They reckon around the 1st of September for that. This is another really cracking deal by Andrew Austin. The DS deal not only adds 5,500 barrels a day, but the 107 million euros price tag will be reduced by something like 50 to 60 million euros for what is the working capital adjustment, bringing the sort of cash outlay for the deal down to about 40 million euros, which they can afford to pay for from their own resources. It's a stunning deal for them because, like all the other deals, it looks like they will they'll come in at a very low. I think this is about $4 a barrel purchase cost, which is exceptionally good. And they always seem to increase in reserves and production. Rock Rose will now be producing 11,300 barrels a day, which is pretty impressive. I've heard Andrew Austin say that he's not going to stop till he gets to 20,000 barrels a day. If he keeps doing these deals, the shareholders will be delighted. He's paid a dividend, he's done a one-off, and the shareholders there should be absolutely delighted. Rock Rose Energy, definitely one for the notebook.
Marvellous. RRE is the ticker there. Malky, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak next week.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're right, Al.
Brand Communications. I'm good, Just. How are you finding the tropical weather?
Yeah, do you know what I'm worried about? Is that we're sort of getting used to it. And it's a dangerous thing, isn't it? Because as we know in this country, we had the beast from the east, which was extreme. Now this weather's extreme. It's the pendulum effect. I always talk about this all the time. I see it happening with stocks and shares as well. Stocks get oversold and then they get overbought. If you can sort of pick up a decent stock when it's oversold, and and have enough to sort of scale in, because it's always a bit volatile at the bottom, then you just sit back and wait for the overbought, and that's the way it sort of works. It's just the stock market is as simple as buying low, selling high. But what's not simple is there's no definitive low and high. What I'm saying is
Nobody rings a bell at the top or the bottom.
It's relative as well, isn't it? What is the low? Yep. What is the high? No one knows where that is until it's in the rearview mirror. So that's why scaling in helps, and you can look at certain things, but scaling in helps, but you've got to sort of have a strategy, but I do like that. Talking about that, I think BT at the moment, if you look at BT's stock price chart there, it looks convincingly like, and I've said this before, I've tried to guess a bottom here before several times, unsuccessfully, but right now I'm quite liking where it is. And if you look at this bottom, the support it's had recently, and compared to the previous bottoms, which have been a V-shaped bottom previously, and that's never a convincing bottom. This has been a proper sort of bottom where one cheek, two cheeks, and the sort of higher lows, and it's gone up and rise, and now it's broken previous resistance. So it's looking quite good. So, but I mean, for people who want to play it safe, this is always a good thing. And I heard this, and I've sort of forgotten about it. I've known it several times, but on a technical chart, and I heard a trader talk about this on a Vox podcast with Martin, the CEO of Vox, and he's a very good American trader. And he says generally for a turnaround stock, big liquid stock. This is not for illiquid microcaps. But if you're looking for a company that's been oversold for a long time and you're looking for a turnaround in it, wait until the share price goes through the 200-day moving average, which is quite a big bounce at the bottom, but then it pulls back then to the 50-day moving average, and it'll retest that level, and then it'll hopefully then have a bit of support there, and then it'll start attacking the 200-day moving average. But then that's when a change in trend has happened, and trend is your friend. Go with the trend, and obviously it's a powerful, sustaining, long-lasting price trend there.
You know? It is, as you say, if there's a clear trend in place, and you can look back at a chart for the year and see successful tests of that low or a clearly defined support level such as the 200-day moving average, then that is the point to buy in. If you're going to scale into a stock, then a larger stock like BT in particular, scaling in like that is the way to go. But also, buy low, sell high. I mean, my old colleague at Malcolm Stacey has said that for years. That's been his mantra. But as you say, no one rings a bell at the top or the bottom. The best way to tell that with a liquid stock is simply on charting.
Yeah, but do you know what? I mean, buy low, sell highs is the famous, even people not involved in the stock market know that phrase, you know, buy low, sell high. And it's almost like it's the most, you know, well-known answer to investing, right? That's all you have to do. But it's not as simple as that, is it? It gets more complicated. But that's the answer. That's the answer.
It's plain common sense. It sounds absolutely simplistic, but actually executing that successfully is a pretty difficult thing to do. And you can only do it with a liquid stock with the help of charts, or if you know a company well, if you know the management of a small company well, and that stock trades, the story is the same, and that stock trades within a defined series of highs and lows, then you can use the same. There are several stocks out there that would sort of fit that particular bill. I mean, Feedback, I think, is one of them. That's trading sort of within clearly defined highs and lows at the moment. So, but again, it's something with a larger stock. If you're looking to scale in, charts are definitely the way forward, and the 200-day moving average is the benchmark that everyone should be looking at.
Yeah, exactly. Marvelous stuff. Okay, Al, let's look at specific stocks.
Specific stocks. Okay, I've got four stocks today. But firstly, on the subject of charting, I want to look at a stock that was picked out by VectorVest last week. Dr. David Paul of VectorVest noted the charting pattern for Hollywood Bowl Group, which the company is currently trading at 228. And support is a little way below that. And
what's the ticker there, Al? Sorry.
The ticket is BOL. I'll discuss the fundamentals in a minute, but the shares pulled back to long-term support, and it's clocked in a series of higher lows through the year, and it's coming at just above 220p, and it's consolidating around this point, and David pointed out that the stock was being aggressively accumulated at this level, and it's got a great fundamental story behind it to back this up as well. So Hollywood Bowl Group, they are the company that the UK's largest 10-pin bowling operator. They've got 59 centres across the UK under Hollywood Bowl, AMF and Bowlplex brands, which you'll...
Hollywood Bowl!
Hollywood Bowl!
That was an advert. I used to work at Red Dragon FM in Cardiff, right? And this advert, we had a Hollywood Bowl in the centre we worked in, the radio station was, and that advert, right, was fantastic. Everyone started saying it, going Hollywood Bowl, and there's a deep voice going Bowl, and it really catchy. You couldn't get out of your head, and they changed it. I thought, what do they do that for? And everyone thought, why did they do that? Why do companies almost work hard to get a catchy brand or take or you know audio sort of snippet? Yeah, and then they change it. And they didn't know, burn it in. Stay with it.
because it's the old mantra in business, isn't it? Everyone's always moving forward. You're moving forward all the time. And I think, yeah.
No, but you want kids singing your thing. That's what you want. That's what they were, you know.
A Mars a day helps you work, rest, and play. You know, it's all those legendary catchphrases, advertising catchphrases that people remember. You can say the marketing's done its job because you remembered it. So if you were going 10 pin bowling, that song might come into your mind, even though it's not being used anymore by the company in its advertising campaign. So, but anyway, back to the story. So Hollywood Bowl, they have 59 centres up and down the UK. They don't own the centres; they lease them. So, in terms of the way they run the business, they keep operating centre costs and liabilities well under control. At the end of May, they announced interims for the 6 months to March, 17.5% increase in pre-tax, and revenues up 9%. Net debt fell by 47%, and the company raised the interim dividend by 13%, paying out 2p for the interim period. Some financial metrics in the game also very bullish as well. Spend per game, so everyone goes in, spends a certain amount of money per game, increased by 5.5% to £9.20, and the company is just further streamlining going forward. So this is a stock that's a great cash generator, experienced management team that know what they're doing. And the VectorVest stock analysis platform, the relative value rating for the company logs the company at 1.42, which is on a scale of 0 to 2, which is anything over 1.2 is excellent. Plus an earnings growth rate of 27%. At the current valuation, VectorVest has got a target or a near-term target of 2.61 pence, so 2.28p. There's more to come. The stock pays a dividend too, and if you're into your 10-pin bowling, then this is a very good place to put your money. It's a niche company, clearly, but there's a great management and team operating this company, and it's a great leisure activity, as we all know.
Okay, yeah. And do you know what? It's quite hard, this one, but just look at the chart there.
And Just can also sing the advertising slogan, yeah, too, which is
better. I can't anymore, because they changed it, which is silly. But, if you look at this, it started off, obviously, when it listed, bowl is a ticker, but it's a bit spiky start. But it did go down, right? It had an oversold level, and then, so you could say it was starting to make a downtrend, oversold, and then the share price went above the 20-day moving average, came back, tested the 50-day moving average, then moved up from like 170 now to 227 is today. So you could say that sort of worked there on that sort of strategy. Okay, anything else, Al?
Yes, three more companies to go through, which are newsworthy. Just want to go back to Salt Lake Potash, Epicode SO4. We've spoken about the company before. Salt Lake Potash have nine huge long life assets. These are lakes in Western Australia, and it's been written about on many occasions and referred to as the most sustainable fertilizer project in the world. In that, the fertilizer is produced from salt lake brines, or the potash is produced from salt lake brines. It rains rarely there, but when it rains, if you've taken all of the potash and material from the surface of the lake, it regenerates. So it's a constantly regenerating project. There's a 85 million tons estimate there. Potash currently sells for $400 per ton. The company are expected to deliver the first cash flow in 2020, so we're less than 2 years away, with annual revenues of $288 million from 2024. Interesting to note that there's state building in this company. Lombard Odier Asset Management about a week and a half ago increased their stake from 15.3 million shares, 8.7%, to 17 million shares, which is just under 10%. So they clearly see huge potential in this. And unlike other potash projects such as Sirius Minerals, this is incredibly easy to access because the stuff is literally scraped from the surface of the lake. It's also close to Kalgoorlie in Western Australia, Elliot, which is a major mining centre, and the road access, the rail access is very good, so they can actually get the stuff out to market cheaply and efficiently. The company's the chairman is Ian Medelmas, who's chairman of Barclay Energy and Equatorial Resources. Matt Simon, CEO, is ex Sierra Mining. So there's a great team in place to run this. And with first cash flow less than a year and a half away, the stock is pretty steady at about 31-32p, which gives it a market cap of 52 million, and clearly, you know, with the JORC estimate of 85 million tons at present, and the work that's being undertaken there, I think that the company are expecting to grow that estimate quite substantially. Align Research have a conviction buy rating and a price target of £1.32. So there's very little downside and plenty of upside. And this is a project that's very easy to get to market. It's not something where you're mining in a region that's controlled and difficult to access. It's there on top of the lake. It's just got to be scraped off and collected and taken to market.
Yeah. Do you know what SO4 is?
Not off the top of my head, no, but you're going to tell me.
It's the chemical symbol for sulfate.
Sulfate, of course it is, yes, yes.
Clever,
yes.
That's clever, that, isn't it? That's
yeah,
clever,
yeah.
That ticker, that. I quite like that.
Clever, yeah.
Cool. Anything else, Al?
Yeah, ECR Minerals. We've spoken about ECR Minerals before. This is run by, of course, Craig Brown, who you've interviewed on several occasions here. ECR Minerals are engaged in Victoria in Australia. They have,
as opposed to the lady.
As opposed to, yes, yeah, Craig isn't engaged to Victoria, to the best of my knowledge, anyway. His wife may well be called Victoria, but, yeah. But that's another matter. And they have five projects in Australia, and they updated with their half-year results last week. Five gold licenses, including, of course, the immortal Bong gold project, where high mineralization was noted there. Six licenses applied for, and 47 targets were identified in the region. Blue Moon, Bung Bong, and Monte Cristo gold projects have been drilled. Bung Bong and Monte Cristo results were announced, and Blue Moon assay results will be announced imminently this week. During the period, the company also acquired the Creswick Gold Project, which has been mentioned frequently by writers writing about the gold in the region. The company is fully funded. It's got net assets of $3.5 million, as opposed to $2.3 million this time last year. And also during the period, it reduced its comprehensive expense to $320,000 as opposed to $430,000 for the previous period. So the costs are well under control. We're waiting to get the results from Blue Moon, but there's an awful lot more to come from this company. And capitalized as it is at under 2 million sterling, the share price, the results were announced last Friday, and the share price popped up by 26% yesterday, probably on the back of expectations for the Blue Moon announcement. But clearly we'll find out about that when that news is out, either to today or later this week.
Yes, ECR is the ticker there, of course, and gold. I do like gold at the moment. I just think the worry of a trade war is a bit, you know, it's looming large. And
everyone's got to have gold exposure in their portfolio. Absolutely.
I've got Cora Gold, early explorer, but a major shareholder of Hummingbird, who were on yesterday, and they've got quite a stacked shareholder register with a lot of money on it. So I quite like those. I like the grades coming out of there. Out of
I hold them too. I have them too in my SIP. Yep, yep. I'm a holder there. So
at the moment, it's not really. Gold price is down a bit, so it's a. And I think you often find this before a sort of rally. So you know, someone's a bit bearish before the bullish run. But yep. Anyway, anything else you're looking at, Al?
Yes, indeed. Also want to talk about Cadence Minerals, epicode KDNC. Kieran Mazzara, the CEO, on last week discussing the latest Zulu lithium venture with Premier African Minerals. But just to reiterate what Cadence are a mining investment company. They have a focus on electric vehicle technology and therefore the lithium mines that will be supplying the industry around the world. They're involved in a number of early stage and late stage lithium projects, and the announcement last week was a joint venture with Premier African Minerals, Epic Code PREM, PREM, to invest $5.1 million as a stage investment into the Zulu lithium project in Zimbabwe, which of course is now a very positive environment given the political changes there over the past year. Cadence have opportunity to earn up to 30% of the going forward with their investment, and there's a net present value there of $120 million worth of lithium-bearing rocks at the moment, which is very positive, and clearly we're going to hear more about that going forward. Cadence's other investments, it's got a series of investments around the world, but the two key ones certainly on the listed front are Bacanora Lithium, which of course has owns and operates the Sonora Lithium Project in Mexico, which is a well-established project, and European Metals Holdings, which operates the Sinovec Lithium Project in Czechoslovakia, again strategically placed to supply the electric vehicle industry as we go forward. Cadence's stake in those two companies is worth $130 million. After financing, that's after financing for the mines and the extraction process is funded, which is pretty considerable considering that currently Cadence trades at 0.21p with a market cap of 17 million. That's quite some upside on offer. Cadence also has its own direct investment into the San Luis project in Argentina, which was initiated late last year. The obviously Argentina is well established as an environment for producing and exporting lithium, and indeed in the San Luis province, the minister there is set to issue licenses for the San Luis project that Cadence are buying into. Cadence have an opportunity to earn in up to 100% of that project, so they could take full ownership, subject to feasibility studies and everything else. So in summary, if you're looking for an opportunity to or a company or a fund to invest into lithium, but you can't be asked to do the research that goes into it, Cadence basically is that vehicle, because they're invested in late stage and early stage projects around the world, and they will only undertake subsequent investments based on thorough research that the company does with the experience it has. And as I mentioned, the valuation just now, 17 million valuation with projects, the two projects alone worth $130 million. The shares have been as high as 0.58p on the year, and it's currently just off year lows at 0.21p. So there's very little reason, if you're looking to buy into lithium, not to invest into Cadence.
Well, you can't say that, Al, actually.
Okay. All right. Well, if you're looking to invest into lithium, Cadence is one of the best vehicles, or probably the best vehicle to give you the broadest exposure that's currently out there right now.
That's better. I like that. You shouldn't tell people to invest. But, I mean, you know, just in all seriousness, if you haven't the time or you can't figure out, you know, which lithium company to invest in, because there's going to be a big future for lithium companies, then, like I say, yeah, you know, to Cadence, like you say, are the experts, and they're doing the due diligence. So
they're doing the job for you.
It's definitely a company worth researching, and there you can get that exposure to lithium. And like I said, the risk is spread somewhat compared to just investing in one company. So there we are. Marvellous, Al, and we'll speak next week.
Speak next week, mate. Yep, all the best. Cheers.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Maestrano Group. They came on for the IPO, actually. I chatted to the guy there. That's MNO. At four, Vesarion. Of course, chatted to Neil yesterday. I told him about battery technology and graphene. That's VRS. At three, Blow, or Block Technology, BLOE. At two, Rockfire Resources. Been top five quite a few times now. So let me check that out. And at number one, it's UK Oil and Gas, UCOG, of course. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. Asia Met Resources, exercise of options and warrants. At four, UK Oil and Gas, conversion of outstanding loan notes. At three, Angus Energy, Kimmeridge assessment at Lidsey. At two, Echo Energy, drilling commences on CSO 2001, in brackets D. Exciting. And at one, Ascent Resources, operational update, AST ticker. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.